Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 332 for September 4th, 2011. Coming up in a few minutes.
They're going to be limited like they always are. We only have a handful of bottles of each one of these whiskeys.
That's Chris Comstock of Buffalo Trace on this year's Buffalo Trace Antique Collection. The 2011 lineup was announced this week. Not only will Chris tell us more about it later on, but I'll have tasting notes for all five whiskeys in the What I'm Tasting This Week department. I'll also have the calendar of events and the comments of the week. But first off, let's look at the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. Buffalo Trace isn't the only Kentucky distiller with a new whiskey this week. Brown-Forman celebrates founder George Garvin Brown's birthday every September 2nd by releasing the annual Old Forester Birthday Bourbon. This year's batch comes from a single day's distilling in 1999. As usual, it'll be available in limited quantities. George Garvin Brown wasn't the only whiskey legend born in September. While the exact date has been lost to history, Jack Daniel was also born in September, and since the records showing his exact birth date no longer exist, Jack Daniels celebrates his birthday on September 1st each year. The distillery did not release a birthday whiskey, but just a birthday bottle. It was a whopper. In fact, it was certified by Guinness on Thursday at an event in New York City as the world's largest bottle of whiskey. It holds 184 liters of Old Number 7. The previous world record was held by a bottle of Tomintoul that's on display at the Whiskey Castle in Tomintoul. It holds 105.3 liters and still claims the record as the world's largest bottle of Scotch whiskey. The Jack Daniel's bottle will be on display at the distillery in Lynchburg, Tennessee. By the way, Jack Daniel was born in 1850, George Garvin Brown in 1846. Now, 1401 is an interesting number. It's on one of the marrying tons used by William Grant and Sons at the campus housing the Glenfiddich and Balvenie distilleries in Dufftown. Last year, the Balvenie's David Stewart created the ton 1401 expression for sale at the distillery. But as the Balvenie's Sam Simmons told me via Skype, it's about to go global.
First of all, I was under the impression that ton 1401 was only going to be a distillery release, but that's not the case, is it?
No, and I mean, I'm excited that you're so interested. I'm sure you're not the only malt maniac who's keen to learn more, or the malt enthusiast even who's keen to learn more. Initially, yeah, I think it was. Ton 1401 was something that David Stewart created basically to use one of these marrying tons, we have a bunch of them, and this particular one, they're unique to our company, to William Grant & Sons. David wanted to use a bunch of different casks from different vintages, to marry them together and to make something that people could see and touch and feel when they're at the distillery. I mean, I was there when David was filling the first ton 1401, the one that was, like you said, for distillery only, and literally seeing David there hand pumping casks into this ton was just a sight to see. He was just so passionate and excited about it. So it yielded 336 bottles, and it was just for people visiting the distillery who took a tour. Now, even staff, myself included, we couldn't buy them. No one who works at the distillery, no one could buy them. We wanted only people who came to the distillery to tour, who came and did the tour, to be able to leave with one. So those 336, they're gone now. And some months ago, we decided to try and create more liquid from these old rare casks sitting in Warehouse 24. So David decided which casks he wanted to use, and then again hand-filled these casks into ton 1401, this time in a slightly higher volume. The ton can hold maybe 2,000 or slightly more liters, so he filled a bunch of casks together and put them into the ton to marry, and then we have ton 1401.
And why was the decision taken to go ahead and put this one out on the general market instead of just keeping it for the distillery visitors?
Well, it's demand. You know, not everyone can make it to the distillery. That's one issue. And so you meet people around the world who are so passionate about whiskey and so passionate about Balvenie in particular, and they're frustrated because they, for whatever reason, maybe will never get to the distillery. So it's frustrating for a lot of consumers, myself included, when you see a whiskey you want to buy and it's not available in your market, or it's available, it's only travel retail or whatever it might be. Sometimes it's frustrating because you're like, well, I'd like to try that, but how am I going to get my hands on it? So the problem with this Ton 1401 is, by nature, because it's a small vatting every time of a maximum of really, it's going to yield 3,000 bottles at the most. We can't make it a global release all at once anyway. So we did a bit, at least at first, for the distillery only. It was extremely popular. We've seen people buying bottles. We've seen people coming back to the distillery just to buy another. We've seen, obviously, some ending up at auction and online sales and such. But to have more and have more widely available is something that Balvenie drinkers wanted, and it's something we are able to provide. And the main fact is, David's so enthusiastic about these tons. First of all, again, he uses them for... He has been using them for decades now to marry Balvenie and Glenfiddich, for that matter, and they're really the only ones in the industry. So it's something that he's really proud of using, and he just likes being hands-on, especially in these last years with the distillery.
Is this going to essentially replace the 17-year-old expressions that had been coming out about this time each year, or is this going to be more limited?
Yeah, totally unrelated. So the 17-year-old, you mean like we had Isla cask almost 10 years ago now. And most recently we had the peated cask, we had Madeira cask, rum cask. That's what you're referring to, I think.
Right.
Yeah, this is separate, completely separate. It's not replacing that line or in any way really related. This is a more aged offer, for one. So, you know, the youngest whiskey in Ton 1401 is 22 years old. So for one, it's just older whiskey. The oldest whiskey is from 1967. So we're using different casks to create something that's really hands-on for David. And it's a similar passion that's driving it as a 17-year-old range, but it really is a different organism altogether, I would say.
Where will batch 2 be available?
So batch number 2 will be in Europe and some markets in the Far East, and as well as South Africa. And then batch 3, which we just emptied from the ton after its marrying period, and it's destined exclusively for the USA. And then we will have a batch 4 that's marrying right now as well. So the plan is, as long as the stocks are there and that David finds casks he thinks makes sense, we're going to continue this and keep having Ton 1401 for as long as we can.
Are you going to rotate the releases around so that different parts of the world get a crack at them occasionally, or every so often?
Well, that's the challenge, right? So like I said earlier, because it is limited by nature, that's the nature of the beast. It's a marrying ton of a maximum volume. The way we got around the issue that, you know, I complained about as a whiskey lover myself, not being able to get something in my market, is to just stagger the releases by location. So we filled the ton with different barrels, let it marry, and then bottle destined for certain markets around the world. So we hope to continue that staggering effect. Yeah, we'll see how it goes, though. I mean, I think right now there's great interest for people to try it. So we'll see how scalable it is. You know, that's part of the problem, too, with all whiskey.
Anything else coming out that we should know about?
Well, probably. I mean, if you do your math, you know that David Stewart's been with the company for nearly 50 years. So there's probably something lying behind that. but no, right now, 1401 is the one that we're all really excited about.
Can't wait to hear what David's working on for his 50th anniversary. Speaking of anniversaries, Glenfarclas is celebrating its 175th anniversary this month. Of course, the Grant family has a special edition malt to mark the occasion. Now, the malt itself isn't 175 years old, of course, but the Chairman's Reserve comes from 4 casks with a combined age of 175 years. The distillery opened back in 1836. It would be a real coincidence if there were 1,836 bottles available. Unfortunately, the Angels kept that from happening. There are only 1,296 bottles available worldwide, except for the U.S., Russia, and Sweden. One more anniversary. I'll have a lot more on this one the next time around. As we heard back in May, Brooke Loudy celebrated the 10th anniversary of its reopening during the Islay Festival in May. But two parties are always better than one. They're holding a special celebration at the distillery this coming weekend for the 10th anniversary and the release of the first Brooklatte 10-year-old single malt produced completely after the reopening. I'll be on Isla next weekend for the celebration. I'll have the complete story next time around on WhiskeyCast. Meanwhile, Ardbeg's Alligator has officially been released. As we heard a few weeks ago, the original bottling was released to Ardbeg committee members in June. The official bottling will now be available in limited amounts worldwide. Donald Trump puts his name on a lot of stuff, but until now, never on a whiskey. That'll change next year when his controversial Trump International Golf Links opens near Aberdeen, Scotland. The resort will have its own single cask bottling for the grand opening from nearby Glendronach Distillery. Glendronach's Billy Walker has picked a 25-year-old cask that will produce 500 bottles of what will be called Trump Scotland Single Malt Whiskey. Glendronach was selected from the area's distilleries to supply a special whiskey for the resort. Let's hope Trump gives Billy Walker some credit. Finally, in health news, it turns out that a drink a day may keep the doctor away. A new study by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control finds that moderate alcohol consumption is one of four lifestyle behaviors that can keep you healthy. The CDC defines moderate alcohol consumption as 1.5 ounce drink of whiskey or distilled spirits per day for women, 2 for men. That's equal to 5 ounces of wine or a bottle of beer, 10 ounces of wine or 2 bottles for guys. The other three lifestyle behaviors the CDC likes: a healthy diet, regular physical activity, and never having smoked. By the way, doubling down on the drinking part does not make up for skipping the other three. That's the news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. Still time to enter the contest to win a trip to visit Glenmorangie in Scotland, where you'll stay at the Glenmorangie House and meet some of the 16 men of Tain. You'll find more details at the Glenmorangie USA Facebook page. Glenmorangie, unnecessarily well-made. A couple of quick program notes now. First off, the debut episode of WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings is now available in the iTunes Music Store. We'll be recording this month's episode soon. And if you're going to be at Whiskey Live Paris the weekend of September 24th through the 26th, we'll be taping October's episode at the festival with a tasting panel selected from people attending Whiskey Live Paris. I mentioned a couple of minutes ago that I'll be on Isla this coming weekend for Brooklatte's 10th anniversary celebration. I've asked Jim McEwen a lot of questions over the years. This time around, I'd like to ask him your questions. It's time for another Your Turn Q&A session. If you have a question you'd like me to ask Jim McEwen, just post it on our Facebook community page or email me at comments@whiskeycast.com. Let's look at the comments of the week now, brought to you this time around by Johnny Walker. Last week, I read a question from Troy Hickson in Melbourne, Australia. He's looking for Suntory's Hibiki 12-year-old whiskey in Melbourne. We had several responses, including one from Eugene Neo, who says he's never seen the Hibiki 12 in Melbourne, but suggested that Nick's may be able to special order it. If you live in Melbourne, you probably know about Nick's. Meanwhile, Joshua Hatton of the Jewish Single Malt Society is planning a trip to Greenville, South Carolina soon and wants to know if there are any good whiskey bars in Greenville. If you know of one, I don't, please let us know on the Facebook page. On that note, Joel Rosner sent me this email. Mark, I'm a listener in Manhattan and noticed that your list of great whiskey bars is missing a great one. Dive Bar at 96th Street and Amsterdam Avenue has a spectacular whiskey list, though in a fairly unprepossessing manner. I've never asked the bar staff for whiskey advice, so I can't speak to their knowledge or helpfulness, but anyone in Manhattan looking for a good whiskey bar should check out the Dive Bar. Thank you, Joel. I also heard from Marcel Simoneau, one of the owners of Norman's Kill, a new whiskey bar in Brooklyn's Williamsburg neighborhood. In fact, it's only been open a week or so and already has more than 220 whiskeys available. I've added links for both bars to our list of great whiskey bars on the resources page of the WhiskeyCast website. And if you have a suggestion to pass along, just let me know. Finally, a sad note. D.G. Blackburn offered a quick toast on the Facebook page last Tuesday in honor of the late Michael Jackson, who died 4 years ago this week after fighting Parkinson's disease. Thank you for the toast, D.G., and slancha, Michael. If you have something to share with our global community of whiskey lovers, just post it on the Facebook page. If you don't use Facebook, well, you can email me. My email address is comments@whiskeycast.com. The comments of the week are brought to you this time around by Johnny Walker on the web at johnnywalker.com. Click the banner at the WhiskeyCast website, and you can become a whiskey insider today. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you, as always, by Laphroaig. Ireland's Kilbeggan Distillery is holding an open day this coming Saturday to celebrate the millionth visitor to the distillery. There will be Saturday bourbon schools each week during September at the Saddleback Inn in Scottsdale, Arizona. This coming weekend is also the second Saturday tasting at the Miner's Delight Inn in Atlantic City, Wyoming. Of course, the Kentucky Bourbon Festival runs from September 13th through the 18th. The Lagavulin Isla Jazz Festival is the weekend of the 16th through the 18th on Isla. Bourbon's Bistro in Louisville will host a Pappy Van Winkle bourbon dinner with Julian and Preston Van Winkle on the 19th. And don't forget to join me in Paris for Whiskey Life Paris the weekend of the 24th through the 26th. You'll find a full calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig. Mark your calendars now for the annual Laphroaig Live webcast. This year, John Campbell and his guests will be in Sydney, Australia on October 6th. You'll find more details at laphroaig.com, where you can also become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla. About this time every year, bourbon and rye whiskey lovers start watching for the arrival of the Buffalo Trace Antique Collection, five limited edition whiskeys that win dozens of awards every year. This year's series has a tough act to follow. Last year's George T. Stagg bourbon was named the best spirit in the world by F. Paul Pakholt of the Spirit Journal. Jim Murray named the William LaRue Weller Bourbon his Bourbon of the Year, and the Thomas H. Handy Sazerac Rye his Rye Whiskey of the Year in the 2011 edition of his Whiskey Bible. Buffalo Trace's Chris Comstock and I discussed this year's series for WhiskeyCast in depth.
Every year, these whiskeys are a little bit different. We've been really pleased how much folks seem to like these different whiskeys. The five brands are the same. However, they'll made up of different barrels, of course, and they're all hand-picked. The batches are different sizes, and they taste slightly different. However, we pride ourselves in tasting and selecting some of our very best barrels for these brands. A Stag, in fact, came in at 142.6 proof, so that's over 70%. Alcohol by volume. Some stout stuff.
I know. I was looking at my notes from last year's release, and actually the Stag is just slightly, barely weaker than last year's. Is there a difference in the taste? I think it was 71.5 to 71.3 this year.
Well, after 15, 16 years, you're going to get that high proof. And, of course, there's tons of flavor in it. I mean, just an amazing bunch of really rich. I think that Stag in general has got some nice dark chocolate notes, some coffee. It seems a little bit even more pronounced this year. I think there's an exaggerated coffee, maybe espresso even, flavor in the George T. Stag. It's just so strong that there's a lot of awesome, very pronounced rich flavors.
Now, your William LaRue Weller has to beat out last year's version, which was Jim Murray's Bourbon of the Year in the 2011 Bible. What's different about this one?
You know, we've received some great praise for William LaRue Weller, as well as the other Antique Collection whiskey. So it's hard to sometimes trump yourself, you know what I mean? To each their own. We've got 45 barrels in this most recent batch of William LaRue. And I loved last year's version. So it's hard to say that this one is better, but I think they're both comprised of some whiskeys that are 11, 12 years old, and the flavor is just as rich, probably a bit more honey and toffee, maybe a tinge sweeter this year.
Now let's talk about the two ryes, the Sazerac Rye 18 and the Thomas H. Handy Sazerac Rye. Those are both regarded as some each year as some of the best rye whiskeys that are produced out there. What's unique about this year's versions?
Well, you're right. Rye whiskey is in short supply. And, you know, the 18-year-old Sazerac Rye is older than most. And it is, in my mind, a tried and true, consistent, well-aged rye. And what you get there is all the spiciness of rye, but the maturity that 18 years provides in the whiskey. So you get some oaky flavors, but it just mellows it out. I like it because it's a nice dry rye as opposed to the Handy. You know, Handy is a bit younger and it's uncut and unfiltered, so you get big bold taste. More allspice in the younger version. It's not quite as dry or mellow, but it's just a big, bold, punch-you-in-the-face sort of rye whiskey, you know what I mean?
And this is only about a little over 6 years old, too. This is relatively, is this younger than most of the previous Handys?
For Handy, we've traditionally picked barrels that are 6-7 years old, to be honest.
Okay.
Because we wanted to have something that contrasted with the 18-year-old version. And the flavors are, although they're both rye whiskey mash bills, because of the age and the proof, they offer different flavors. And that's what's great about the Antique Collection, is that there's five different, very unique tastes.
And let's talk finally about the Eagle Rare. The 17-year-old is on the label, but this is actually a lot older than 17, isn't it?
Yeah, actually, the barrels that we had to choose from and the ones that we really liked the most were 18 years and 7 months old. So although we were maintaining our 17-year-old age statement, the whiskey in the bottle is made up of 24 barrels that have all been aging for nearly 19 years old. So it's nice and dry and delicate. What you'd expect from a 18-plus-year-old bourbon.
And at that age, a lot of bourbon tends to get really oaky, but this one is not oaky at all, right?
Well, at that age, you're right. Bourbon can overage and become too oaky in some people's eyes or on some people's palate, but there's, I think, a number of people that actually like that dry, delicate, oaky, tannic, tobacco, leather type taste profile. So this whiskey is great for that particular preference. I don't think it's passed by any means, but it definitely has that older, like you said, oaky flavor to it.
Now, when will these be available and where?
Well, they're going to be limited like they always are. We only have a handful of bottles of each one of these whiskeys. Like I said, on the Eagle Rare, we only had 24 barrels that we selected. And after 18 years, there's not a lot of liquid left in those barrels. So there's not a lot of any of these whiskeys to go around. That being said, we're going to try to do our best to spread them out across the country. So look for them in some select liquor stores and bars towards the end of September. I would say early October would be the latest. It takes time for us to distribute it across the country and get it out into stores, into the trade.
Will any of these be exported?
All of these will be exported in very limited quantities. We're sending some here and there, including the United Kingdom. So there's been some demand from the UK, and although most of it is sold here in the United States, we do try to share these whiskeys with other parts of the world.
Are you surprised by the reaction to the antique collection each year? I, as soon as I got the news release, I posted a quick note about it on the WhiskeyCast Facebook page and immediately got a response back from somebody that the annual race to track down the bottles is on. So are you surprised by just how people have taken to this collection over time?
I'm thrilled that people like the whiskey as much as they do. You never know. You wait 15, 16, 17, 18 years for these bourbons and whiskeys to age and put a lot of effort into it and got pride at stake, and you just hope that people like the taste, and they have. So it's been incredibly gratifying. I wish I had more because of, planning, decades ago, and the angel share. There's not as much as we wish there would be to go around, but I hate people have to go on scavenger hunts and seek down bottles from here and there and everywhere else. But I guess there's some fun in that. We'll make more, and eventually we'll have more available. But, that takes years and years, a long time to let these whiskeys age. And hopefully if folks have one or a couple that they like, they can grab a bottle or two and try to enjoy that for as long as they can, because the next batch is not going to come out until a year from now.
I can't let you go without asking about the second batch in the Single Oak Project, because that came out is coming out now as we speak with the second 12 bottles. How has that been received so far, as far as you've seen it?
I think that the Single Oak Project is a really cool idea, and we've talked about it. Each bottle is unique amongst all the other 191 bottles. And I can taste them side by side and tell the difference. What I'm curious to see now is what other people think. We've gotten a pretty good reaction from whiskey enthusiasts that have gone online to singleoakproject.com and started to review these whiskeys. I want to see more of that, because it doesn't necessarily matter what I think. I want to know what everyone else thinks. And I think we've got close to 100 whiskey reviews to date, and most of those are from the very first release. And like you said, we're into the second release. So if people get these bottles and can taste them and compare side by side and go online and tell us what they think, and then, of course, after they do, the website will reveal everything about that particular bottle, from where the tree was cut down and if the barrel came from the top half of the tree or the bottom, and whether it was rye whiskey or wheat recipe, how long were the staves dried, and so on and so forth. But that feedback from whiskey enthusiasts around the world is invaluable. At the end of this Single Oak Project, if we get enough feedback from enough whiskey enthusiasts, then there'll actually be some really good learning there. If we don't get as much as many reviews and thoughts from people who really know and like whiskey, then we're not going to be able to determine as much from the research project, really. So to sum it up, I'm pleased with people's reaction so far and the amount of people that have taken the time to give us feedback on some of the bottles so far. And I'm waiting patiently, hoping that more people will take us up on the offer to have their voice heard and tell us what they think of these different single oak project whiskeys.
Are you surprised by the demand for these bottles? I've seen some of them showing up on eBay for $200 to $300 for a single bottle from the single oak project.
I have not seen that. That is quite remarkable. That's a hefty price to pay for a 375 milliliter bottle of bourbon. Although it's, you know, each bottle is very rare, and so I guess that's what's driving the price up. But the fact that they're rare is only part of the story. I think that the most interesting part of the Single Oak Project is not the fact that there's only a limited number of each bottle, but the true uniqueness of the whiskey inside the bottle.
And the next batch will be coming out in probably November, right? Just in time for the holidays?
Exactly. We want to release a new Single Oak Project batch about every 3 months. And there will be 16 batches. So if we can hold on to that schedule, we'll get all 16 batches released at the end of a four-year period. And then the results will be in. You know, assuming people give us feedback at the end of 4 years, we'll be able to tell everyone which whiskey got the highest praise out of 192 unique whiskeys. But we won't know until, I guess, 2015.
As Chris said, this year's antique collection will start showing up in stores soon. Start sucking up to your local retailer now if you want to crack at one. I received samples of all 5 whiskeys in the antique collection this week. Let's run through them in the What I'm Tasting This Week department. Let's start off with the rye first. The Sazerac 18-year-old is bottled at 45% ABV. The nose is rich and spicy with toasted rye bread, a hint of smoke, molasses, and cinnamon, very well balanced. The taste has an intense cinnamon spiciness that lingers well with an underlying sweet touch of molasses and brown sugar that provide a nice balance. The finish is long, spicy, and smooth, and this is my favorite of the range. I'm scoring the Sazerac 18 Rye a 95. The Thomas H. Handy Sazerac Rye is bottled at 64.3% ABV. Despite the strength, I found the nose to be muted with no burn and notes of allspice, nutmeg, a soft touch of rye bread, and oak, with just a hint of maple syrup. The taste is powerful with a strong spicy pepperiness that fades nicely, with a tart fruity touch of green apples and brown sugar. The finish is smooth and long. I'm scoring the Thomas H. Handy Sazerac Rye a 93. Now for the bourbons. The Eagle Rare 17 is actually about 18 and a half years old, as Chris mentioned. It's bottled at 45% ABV. The nose is very smooth with oak, caramel, brown sugar, vanilla, and a hint of nutmeg. The taste is smooth with a slow buildup of cinnamon to a nice lingering peak, while still showing caramel and brown sugar sweetness underneath. The finish is very long, smooth, and slightly spicy. This may be the best of the Eagle Rare 17s yet. I'm scoring it a 94. The William LaRue Weller Wheated Bourbon is a whopping 66.75% ABV, but the nose has minimal burn. It is spicy and smooth with nutmeg, vanilla, linseed oil, a hint of cinnamon, and oak. The taste has a great mouthfeel. It's syrupy at first with a touch of maple before a blast of pepper that fades quickly to reveal some vanilla and hazelnut notes. The finish lasts longer with each sip and those vanilla and hazelnut notes as well. I'm scoring the William LaRue Weller Bourbon a 93. And now for the Stag. Slightly down from last year's strength at 71.3% ABV,
The nose is toasted oak, caramel, vanilla, and hints of almonds and cinnamon. The taste is thick and oily with a blast of chili powder that fades slowly to reveal oak, vanilla, and almonds. The finish lingers nicely with almond and oak notes, too. I'm conflicted by this one. In the past, I've used words like thermonuclear to describe the stag, but this year's version seemed more refined to me. Fortunately, I saved my samples from the previous years, so I went back and tasted the 2011 stag head-to-head with the 2010 and 2009 versions. Here's what I found. The nose is very similar in the 2011 and 2010 stags, but last year's has a more intense taste. The 2009 is spicier on the nose than both of the more recent versions, but it takes a little longer to build that spiciness on the taste. Once it gets there, it lasts longer and then well into the finish. If you've tasted previous stags like the 2010 or the 2009 and been overwhelmed, this year's may just be the one for you. It has a great mouthfeel, slightly smoother with all of the flavor. I'm scoring the 2011 George T. Stag Bourbon a 92. I'm adding my notes for all five to the free WhiskeyCast apps for iPhone, iPad, and Android. The Apple version is sponsored by the Glenrothes. The Android version is sponsored by Ben Romick. They're also available at the WhiskeyCast website, along with links to our Facebook community page and my Twitter feed, the calendar of events, my photo gallery and exhibition prints, and a complete archive of past episodes. The address is WhiskeyCast.com. And my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com. WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2011, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. Next time around, I'll be in Scotland for the Brooklady 10th anniversary celebration on Isla. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.